Today's reading is a poem by Shane Coisan called Shoulders. Like many, I love to look at the stars. I love the fact that ours is just one upon many. What I love about astronomy is that our constellations, they tell a story. Our constellations were born from mythology. Mythology was our first attempt to understand the world in which we live. We put a god in everything, and those gods would give us our reasons. Why is the sky blue? Who chose blue? The gods. How come men have nipples? It's the will of the gods. Why does this wine taste so good? There's a god in it! And for a while, there was not a single thing that the gods could not explain. We believed that their anger gave us lightning, their despair gave us rain. We whispered our desires to them, believing that their charity would sustain us. But those gods, they're just stories. But stories became a large part of how we learn. They burned lessons into our memories. They became a part of how we remember. We can remember almost everything, right down to that first unbearable bee sting, when we learned that this tiny blue marble we call the world has rules. Rule number one, don't mess with the bees. An unforgettable lesson brought to you by your memories. I remember that I grew up loving mythology. I remember the story of the Titan Atlas, who was also the god of astronomy, the original global positioning system sending sailors safely home by telling them which constellations to keep starboard. He taught us about the stars and in all this while he held at bars, our pale blue dot. But Atlas is caught between two different tellings of his story. In the first, he leads a rebellion against Olympus and is sentenced to hold the heavens on his shoulders for eternity. In the second story, he is chosen to be the guardian of the pillars that hold up the earth and the sky. I prefer the second story. It means that the world is not a punishment, but rather a responsibility. But just how can just one be responsible for such a burden? How can just one be responsible for all this? When I think of Atlas, I think of a single drop of rain. I think of how unfair it would be to hold a single drop solely responsible for making the entire world clean again. Our dilemma stands before us like a mountain carved into a blockade. The sheer magnitude of our problem would be enough to dissuade anyone. How do we save the world? We lay in our beds curled into question marks, wondering, what can we do? Where do we start? Is hope a glue crazy enough to hold us together while we're falling apart? The burden seems immense, but we can do this. We must take the martial arts approach at loving our planet, love as self-defense. Forget about the cost, there will be no other things worth a saving as this. Nothing more important, nothing as precious as his home. All of our stories start and end here. We are sheltered within an atmosphere that has given us every single breath we will ever take. Every monument we have ever made will come from the flesh of our planet, water like blood, skin like soil, bones like granite. It is not a myth, there is no debate, facts are in. Fact is there's never been any question. We are facing crisis. We dismiss the truth not because we can't accept it, but because having to commit ourselves to change is a scary prospect for anybody. The most alarming part of the statement, we are facing crisis, is not the word crisis. It's the word we. Because those two letters take responsibility away from one and square it restfully on the shoulders of everybody. We are Atlas now. But our strength will come from finding a way to share and shouldering the responsibility of turning the impossible into somehow we will do this. We can dismiss apathy, we can reject uncertainty, we can be the new chapter in our story. We will not see change immediately. We must act in faith as the hour hand grips the minute hand and they land on the 11th hour. We must believe like the seed that change is possible to see. Never sees the flower. It grows knowing it must become more than what it is. It changes because in growth all of its potential can be unlocked. Change is like rain. It starts with a single drop. Just one, like our pale blue dot. Caught in an endless waltz called gravity, we circle the sun, wondering who, if anyone, left the lights on. We are constellations drawn upon the earth. We are connected to one another. We are bound. We must behave as the arms that connect the ground, the sky. We must try to be more like the rain. Our stories may differ, but our goal is the same. How do we save our pale blue dot? We act as the rain, realizing that each individual drop is as equal and important as any. We act as one, but now we are many.
In Unitarian Universalism, many people believe in many different things. Let it be God, the universe, math, or some unknown entity flying among the stars. Whatever. They are all different, and they are all perfect for the people who worship them. And I have my own takes on the world. You know how some people can get up and talk for hours and hours on end about some topic? Maybe a sport, a hobby, a school subject? Well, I can talk nonstop about one thing. History. Specifically history between 41 and 30 BC. Now, I bet my parents are rolling their eyes. And if my friends were here, they would be letting out exasperated groans. Why? Because 41 to 30 BC is all I talk about. I always try to steer the topic from whatever we are talking about to in between those dates. Now, why then? Those are mighty specific years to be so thoroughly addicted to. I love these years because in 41 BC, Mark Antony walked onto a golden boat in the city of Tarsus and fell in love with the brilliant queen of Egypt, Cleopatra. In the next 10 years, Mark Antony had 5 children, married twice, started a civil war, and left the world to the famed Caesar Augustus. Now, why on earth would I care? Because even during that reading earlier about mythology and wine, I felt connected. Mark Antony and Cleopatra's story is nonstop in my mind. A never-ending flood of information ricochets around my skull. Wikipedia has become my best friend, and each time I find out a new fact I didn't know, some ancient family connection I can't believe, my heart does a little somersault. But why? It doesn't make the faintest sense. Why am I so engrossed, so invested, so in love with people I have never met? We'll never know past historical fact and fiction novels. How come when my teacher fawns over Caesar Augustus, my mind is flown into a rage and my day becomes ruined? Why am I, Atlas, holding the responsibility of their story? It's nonsensical, illogical. In a way, it's against the current understanding of God. So why? Why does it make me so happy, the love of people 2,000 years ago? I don't know. Why does God matter to you? Why does the universe make sense? Why does math seem like the only answer? I don't know, but I think it has something to do with how it makes you feel. Mark Antony and Cleopatra's story makes me happy. They make me love the world and be empathetic and a better person. No, it doesn't make sense. But God doesn't make sense to me, and math can only go so far in my understanding of the incomprehensible universe. I love the way Unitarian Universalism lets me think that, lets me hop onto the all-knowing Google and bury my head in textbooks. So even if I am nonsensical, illogical, incomprehensible, I am happy, and I believe in the freedom Unitarian Universalism allows. Many times in RE, over the years, and currently in youth group, my interests and passions and ideas have been welcomed along with everybody else's. Sometimes we talk about universal belief systems, but sometimes we talk about points of interest for us individually. Last summer, Miss Linda asked people in the congregation to share information about a culture they were connected to. Most people brought a culture to RE that was from their country of origin or a place they had visited or lived. I, of course, wanted to share my interest in ancient Egypt. I was glad Miss Linda said yes, because I enjoyed bringing my interest in the art and ideas of ancient Egypt to the youth of this congregation. I know that in some church communities, I might not have been able to share that, but the freedom to share myself here is absolutely perfect for me.
Hello, my name is Gabriel. Freedom. To be free is to not be subject to the control or domination of another. Another. I felt in my life that sometimes I'm not imprisoned by another human being or some entity of another kind. I'm imprisoned by myself. I lived a sad, lonely life as an angsty, prepubescent teenager. I must have spent more time in my basement playing Minecraft than I did talking to other people. Probably the only girl I talked to was my mother. And that's a good thing in some ways, but bad in others. I had so many dark feelings. So many feelings of anger and disbelief about how my life was so terrible. How I didn't know who I was or where I wanted to go. And the only outlet I had was, again, Minecraft. And that can only go so far. This was my life for a good period of time. And then I moved to Seattle and I found that I was capable of something. And what I found is that I have a voice of an angel. And I'm a great actor. And I was astonished because I hadn't realized this before. I had gone from someone who had no self-confidence, no self-empowerment, no belief that I could achieve, to someone who was class president of the freshman class, a lead in a musical as a freshman. And I was in disbelief. Because the only thing holding me back, the only thing that stopped me from reaching my dreams was not someone telling me that I couldn't do it, was me telling myself that I couldn't. And then that is when I blossomed. It's an amazing feeling when those curtains open. When you see the audience staring at you, smiling. And I would have never been able to experience that if I hadn't realized that I was imprisoned and chained by myself. You see the world differently when you stop trying to force yourself into a box which doesn't define you. You stop forcing others into boxes which don't define them either. Once you see yourself as an amazing, imperfect human, you can't help but see everyone else as amazing, imperfect humans. When you finally realize that you are capable of everything, when you believe you are capable of everything, I think that is when freedom is born. Thank you.
Freedom is something everyone believes they want. With freedom, though, comes great responsibility. And lots of people want freedom, but don't want the responsibility and don't want to be held accountable. Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not themselves, and under a just God cannot long retain it. You may recognize those words either from 16th President Abraham Lincoln or from a sermon that Reverend Donnie gave a few weeks ago. What is freedom? When you type "what is freedom" into Google, three definitions are listed. The first, the power or right to act, speak, or think as one without hindrance or restraint. The second, absence of subjection to foreign denomination or despotic government. And the third, the state of not being imprisoned or enslaved. So I asked my friends and peers what they thought freedom meant. I actually asked, what does freedom mean to you? What does freedom mean and what does freedom mean to you, I believe, are two different things, because the latter of the two suggests a more open and opinionated response. What is freedom, according to Google, has three answers. But what does freedom mean to you, I believe, has infinitely many responses, or at least the number of people there are on this planet, which, according to Google, is 7.13 billion as of 2013. Here are just a few of the answers I received. What does freedom mean to you? Freedom to me is a type of mindset where you feel comfortable with the person that you are and feel no attachment to a shackle that may bring you down and force you into becoming someone you're not. Maria. Freedom means to me being able to speak my mind and not have to worry about being persecuted. It means I can live without worrying about being controlled or over-controlled, and I can be my own independent person with my own rules for myself without having to follow what someone else tells me to do. Claire. Freedom means being able to express yourself without any judgment, without any fear, and without any expectations. It's about being able to be exactly who you are without second thoughts about how the world is going to react. To be free does not mean to do whatever you want, whenever you want. It means to do the right thing when it is right to do so. Demetrius. To me, freedom is not being forced to do something against my will and having the ability to have a voice. Aaron. I think freedom is comparative and not absolute. I think it's obeying the laws and not violating other people's freedom first. Then you can do what you want to do and say what you want to say, being your true self at the highest degree without the feeling of guilt. But it's not only obeying the laws, it's the freedom and ability to change them, too. Laws are also comparative. They are always developed with freedom. First obey, then use the social power to modify them if necessary. I think sometimes power means freedom, too. Yoka. To me, freedom is being able to make a living anywhere in the world I want to be, and the land of the free is where I choose to be. Freedom means being able to decide what my daily schedule will be like. To me, freedom means the ability to be able to choose how to live my life, freedom of choice. Julie. To me, freedom means being able to learn from my mistakes. Clarissa. That's what's great about Unitarian Universalism. You are free to believe what you want, and you are free to be yourself. And you are free to have your own definition of what freedom means to you.
We have time maybe for just a few minutes of reflection. I invite you, if you have a question for our youth or a response, please raise your hand and we'll bring you a microphone. Well, actually, I'll start, because we talked about Passover a bit at the beginning. We had our reading from Desmond Tutu, and then we had the song. And Passover, when it comes to freedom and responsibility, that is embedded in the story of Passover. Because the story of Passover is the story of the people of Israel, the Israelites, escaping from the land of Egypt, achieving freedom. And yet when they achieved their freedom, they found that their freedom came with responsibility. One responsibility was to look to the freedom of others. There's a verse in Deuteronomy in the Jewish scriptures that says, "Love the stranger among you, for you once were a stranger in the land of Egypt." Freedom comes with responsibility. And I really appreciate the sermons and the poem that kind of spoke to these different experiences of freedom. Any other questions or reflections?
My name's Mark. I want to at least say how impressive it is to hear the younger folks express pretty complicated topics, personally revealing topics. It's really quite something, and I'm glad that this congregation provides that kind of outlet for the younger folks.